Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Tonight on SDPB-TV, you can tune in for Frontlines, a subprime education. Frontline first examined the story of for-profit colleges in 2010, investigating allegations of fraud and predatory behavior. Now, correspondent Martin Smith continues his work by turning the lens on Corinthian College and others. Martin Smith is joining us from New York today live. Martin, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Now, when you first started looking into for-profit colleges in 2009 or so, did you think in 2016 you'd still be looking at some of the same things?
I don't know if I thought that far ahead at that point, but I certainly, you know, they were booming then, in large part because the economy was faltering and people were losing their jobs, and these for-profit schools are countercyclical in that they thrive when the economy goes bad. So I don't know, and some of the decline in enrollment in these schools and some of the trouble that some of the schools have had is due to the fact that the economy has improved, that unemployment is down. But they're around for a long time to come, and we can talk about why that is. Mm. But I think I knew then that they'd still be around.
So I want to start, if we can, with really the heart of what some of these students are feeling and going through. You talked about when the economy is down, these colleges sort of thrive. The Frontline piece begins with a homeless couple. They're living in a tent and are recruited to become college students, to make a better life for themselves and their children. There's a lot at stake for them.
You know, it's really heartbreaking when you think of some of the people that are enrolled in these schools. And like you mentioned, we focus on a couple who was homeless in a tent. They had meth habits. And they decided that they should try to make something better out of their lives. They'd reached a point that they wanted to turn the corner. So one of them goes online. And, you know, there are all these sites that collect information, on visitors to sites, and then you get a call. There's very aggressive recruiting going on. These schools are 90% funded by federal student loans, and those loans are very easy to get. And so they're able to reach out through aggressive marketing, through these websites and phone calls and follow-up, to get people to sign up. And then the money starts to flow. The problem is, the issue is whether or not the students are getting a quality education, a useful degree, because they're going to come out of this with $20,000 or $30,000 in debt. And if you were homeless to begin with, and then you get out with a worthless degree, and you got $20,000, $30,000 in debt to pay off, you probably shouldn't have done it in the first place.
Are there academic standards?
You know, there are accreditors. The reason that they are able to get these student loans is because these government loans is because the government will supply you or me or anybody else, really literally in many cases, anybody with a pulse, with a student loan as long as there is an accrediting agency. But the problem is that this accreditation is suspect in many cases. Some of these accreditors are staffed by members of the very schools that they're accrediting. And so that's the only standard. After that, you're pretty much on your own. It's not to say that there aren't some schools, whether they're brick-and-mortar schools or online schools only, that provide some education. But there's too many instances where there's been aggressive marketing and predatory sort of behavior, signing people up and not giving them a good education.
And those recruiters are really coached or taught or trained to, as one woman says, dig deep and get to their pain, find where their source of their pain is and work on it. So that doesn't sound like someone who's recruiting for college.
And they spend like 10 times in some cases more on marketing than they do on their professors, on their teachers, on their curriculum. That's an enormous difference between that and a usual state school, community college, situation. So they're spending a lot on marketing. And yeah, I talked to a number of people who told me that their script, when they called a student or prospective student, was to find their pain and then work them to sign up for a loan.
And they're not terribly concerned about whether even the student could academically handle anything at this point, much less what they're offering in their education. But there's not a, you know, you have to take an SAT or you have to take an, you know, there's no admissions academic standards to even get accepted. Everyone's accepted is what it seems like.
Yeah, everybody's accepted. I talked to one fellow who was going to ITT, which is just, I guess, last week, was shut down. And 40,000 students, including him, are left out in the lurch. He had just had a stroke. He was clearly not qualified to be getting an architectural design degree that he was going for. But yet, you know, they can get the money. They'll put him in a seat. They call it, you know, asses in classes, I think.
And he's talking to you about just wanting to staff welfare.
Yeah, he just wants to get by. But he's going to end up with all this debt. Now, because the school closed down, he will have recourse to get his loan forgiven. But guess who pays it? It's us.
Yeah, that's my next question. Let's talk about the money. So we kind of got to the heart of who's being affected. Now let's talk about the money and where it all lands, because this sounds a little bit familiar. We use the word subprime for a reason. It brings us back to a housing crisis.
It does. This is a subprime education, too much debt, no doc loans. We all remember those, where anybody could get a loan to buy a house. Well, does anybody can get a loan to go to school? But at the end of the day, when this whole house of cards falls down, as it's happened with a few schools now, big ones, some of the largest universities in the country, collapsing, and it will be the taxpayer, you, me, and our neighbors, who will pay the bill. And there is something like a quarter trillion dollars, I think it is, $250 billion or something, that's at stake in these for-profit schools.
And then what happens to the CEOs and the admissions directors and the professors who have been running this operation, you know, something like Corinthian or ITT? It shuts down. There's a lot of money waiting to be recovered. What happens to them?
Well, they're out of work, or in the case of Corinthian, which is the school that we focus on most in this program, the Department of Education in Washington was looking at this situation and decided it would be better if they could find a buyer for the school that would promise to right the ship. And so they were able to find a company, oddly, a company that had made its millions in debt collection from students. So there's a grand irony here, because you're talking about a group that had put away $250 million in a war chest because they had been collecting bad debt and getting a fee. And then they're going to take over some 50-plus schools of Corinthian. In that case, if there is a buyer, then the taxpayer is not on the hook, because those students can continue. The real question is whether or not that buyer, which has no experience in running schools, they've only been doing debt collection, whether they're going to do a better job. They've kept many of the same teachers and staff that were there, you know, at Corinthian, that school that failed that they bought.
So they keep some of the teachers and staff, and these are the same teachers and staff who, in the piece, you talked to three nursing students. And I'm sorry, I don't remember what school they were at, but it was under
the
umbrella.
They were going to one of these, the Everest College, which is part of Corinthian.
Sure. And so their rotation for pediatrics, rotation for nursing, is what? Do you want to say it, or should I?
No, I mean, they got to visit a daycare center for their pediatrics rotation.
So there's, forgive me for, maybe this is, I don't think it's extending it too far, but there's a teacher who thinks that's okay, and that teacher very well could still be working at that school.
That's right. I mean, I don't know in the specific case if that teacher was able to parlay and to have a continuing job. But yeah, some of the same thinking. There was also the case that those nurses were sent on their psychiatric rotation to a museum of Scientology. And those who know anything about Scientology, they think that all psychiatry is a fraud. Mm. So it made no sense whatsoever. It was a travesty.
And so they go into the workplace, even if the school doesn't close, they get their certification or their degree, depending on what they're seeking. And I'm guessing they're not particularly hireable.
We followed up on those nurses because that really stuck with me, mm-hmm. those three young women who were trying to become nurses. We followed up with one of them, and she had $28,000 in debt when she graduated, and she had to go back to school because her degree was worthless. Nobody wanted to take her. Mm. She dutifully paid off that $28,000 and borrowed money to go to another school. And now she's working as a nurse. God bless her. But, you know, why should anybody have to go through that? You know, you're dealing with a whole group of people, some of these who have nobody in their family has gone to college. So, you know, their families can't tell them that there's a difference between Everest College and the University of Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. or some such thing. They just don't know. And so they're easy prey for these predatory outfits.
So who's looking into the legality of all this? I know you have the Attorney General of, is it California, in the piece. So who's kind of digging into it and picking apart to see what's inside?
I'm glad you asked that question because that was a major concern of mine. Because I saw that Corinthian was going down. And so my first question was, what caused that? Who was paying attention? And as it turned out, it wasn't the main regulator that we have that we fund, the Department of Education in Washington, D.C. It was attorneys general around the country and specifically the Attorney General in California, who had heard anecdotes like those nurses that we just talked about and other stories from students that felt that they were preyed upon and defrauded. That decided to start investigating. And it was from that investigation that the news got to the Department of Education in Washington. And they simply put a halt on new money going to new students. And they weren't doing it as an enforcement, it wasn't part of their due diligence or regulation. And the school collapsed immediately to the surprise of the Department of Education. So it really concerned me that the Department of Education, which is our chief regulator of these schools, wasn't on the ball.
Lobbyists there? Some political reasons for them not being on the ball, or is it just oversight?
Well, it is true that the Department of Education runs into a buzzsaw on Capitol Hill because both sides of the aisle are heavily lobbied, and many of them nicely supported with campaign contributions by the lobby of these schools. They have an association in Washington, and it lobbied heavily. So you can go up and down, and there's people, both Democrat and Republican, who've taken a lot of campaign money from these schools or their trade association in Washington. And so they've been sort of lax on enforcing anything.
So I'm curious how you sort of came to this being an interest of yours and something that you would follow up and follow along for so many years. What's so intriguing to you about it personally that makes you kind of wake up in the morning and take the next step?
Well, I kept seeing this University of Phoenix everywhere I traveled in the country. I travel quite a bit because I do a lot of stories around the country. And I sort of got curious about what it was. And once I started looking into that, this whole world sort of opened up to me. Mm. We need to provide opportunities and education to people. But the idea that these for-profits who are answerable primarily to shareholders who are demanding growth are in the position of aggressively marketing themselves because they have to grow, so they have to get bigger every year, which means they'll take anybody with a pulse to get that federal money. Mm-hmm. The idea that this was going on, preying on the least prepared to discern the quality of what they were getting, I mean, that just seemed that was just infuriating to me. Mm. And I just couldn't, you know, I was fortunate enough to, you know, my brothers and sisters had gone to colleges. I knew something about it when I stepped into that world. I knew what I was getting. These are people that we ought to be treating fairly, and we're not as a country. We're unleashing upon them these predatory schools.
What do you think needs to happen next?
Well, I think that I think people need to continue to cover this. I think journalism plays a role here, but I think that the Department of Education, which I will say, there's I sense much more awareness of the urgency of this issue this time around than I did 6 years ago. So that's a positive step. Mm. But it takes leadership at the top. It takes, you know, some, you know, the problem is we have two candidates running who both in a way are, have had, have benefited from the sector.
Now, I was going to ask you that, but I saw a screener, so it wasn't finalized. But both those candidates are kind of alluded to a little bit. And do you want to expand on that, how both of them
it's
sort
tricky.
Of have don't have completely clean hands in this conversation?
It's tricky, and that's why I sort of hesitated when I when I went down that alleyway. I mean, first off, Trump University is not one of these for-profit schools. It's essentially called a university, but it's not one. Mm-hmm. It's a real estate seminar. And because they don't have any accreditation from anywhere, from anybody, they are not qualified to take federal loans. So mm-hmm. they don't really line up in parallel. Although they are exploiting, the charges are, and it's going to trial, that the charges are that they are also exploiting. And certainly we know, we've heard many people talk about mm-hmm. having bad experiences at Trump University. The other side, the Clinton campaign, the Laureate University, which is a very large for-profit school with a very small presence in the United States, it's mostly Latin America, hired Bill Clinton onto its board and paid him over 5 years $18 million. It is a for-profit school. It does have accreditation here. That just gives you an example, though, of the kind of money that's sloshing around here and the kind of people who are willing to take it. So, you know.
We look forward to your work on this in the future, Martin Smith. We appreciate your time. Frontlines, a subprime education, runs tonight, SDPB-TV at 8 p.m. Central, 7 Mountain. Martin, thanks so much.
Lori, thank you.